Seasonal affective disorder, often shortened to SAD, is a common type of depression that comes and goes with the seasons, typically starting in the late fall and early winter with less daylight and going away during the spring and summer. Naturopathic Dr. Ali Swabany visits with our Ashley Thornburg about SAD.
Dr. Swabany, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What is seasonal affective disorder?
Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression that comes and goes with the seasons. Typically, it starts in late fall or early winter and then goes away in spring and summer. That is a typical cycle of seasonal affective disorder, but there are also cases of summer depression, less common.
So how is it that we can have a depression that can change with the seasons?
So just terminology-wise, the reason it's called seasonal affective disorder versus depression is that it comes and goes with the seasons. Depression does tend to be more chronic, but it's under that blanket umbrella, probably because we don't exactly have a classification for it in any other way.
Okay.
It comes and goes because a lot of things change in our environment and in our bodies from season to season. And so that is the underlying reason why we notice this more sometimes of year than others.
Okay. Is it just a lack of sunlight?
That's certainly a piece of it. There's a lot of theories or hypotheses, I guess, that they're working on to try to truly understand seasonal affective disorder. And most of them focus on changes in the brain, the neurotransmitters, that the chemicals in your brain, essentially, your hormones, your circadian rhythms, or your sleep and wake cycles. So these things, of course, are correlated with the light and dark in your part of the world mm-hmm. at different times of year. And there might also be some genetic implications and some other psychological factors, but the primary thing we've found consistently is that sunlight has a lot to do with it.
So those of us in the northern climates might be more prone
susceptible
to this?
Yep.
Okay. What are the rates, though, at, you know, for this area anyway?
So I know the statistic in our country, but I don't know for sure necessarily about our area, but there's a wide variance in the levels, again, that it's reported. So again, people have this but don't call it that or don't recognize it as that. Mm. But from anywhere from 3 to 10 million cases each year are reported
okay.
of seasonal affective disorder. And it is more prevalent in women.
What would be some of the key indicators that we should be looking for? I mean, yeah, it's easy to say I'm more tired. There's
right.
more than that.
Right. So We all probably get a little tired here and there throughout the year, but particularly in the winter. But those feelings of hopelessness and sadness, of course, thoughts of suicide are going to be signs of depression. Oversleeping, sleeping too much, not being able to sleep, concentration difficulties, severe drops in energy levels and fatigue, irritability. And sort of that isolation can be a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just to note that if you are somebody who may get seasonal affective disorder in the summer months, I'm just going to tack on that that does tend to present as more of an anxiety, lack of sleep, weight loss, poor appetite.
Almost sounds more like a mania.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Would someone who is more prone to seasonal affective disorder in the winter be also prone to it in the summer and just have a change in how it's expressed, or do you kind of only get one or the other?
Generally, it'd be one or the other, because if you have both, then we're moving into other types of, like, other categories of mental illness, because you'd be having then those symptoms throughout the year.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. So what can we do?
One of the things that I think of as I go through the list of symptoms of seasonal affective disorder is, you know, you can look at that and think, is there anybody who lives in our region who doesn't have seasonal affective disorder, right? Like, there's weight gain, there's drops in energy, there's feeling of wanting to cozy up and be at home, basically hibernate, So I don't mean to downplay the severity of it or the importance of it, but I also want to talk about another way to frame seasonal affective disorder that maybe isn't talked about as much in the mainstream, which is just considering our human natural cycling, just as nature does, just as the animals do. You talked about the bear hibernating. We are intimately connected to nature, or we should be. We have been since the beginning of time, and more we are less connected. So we somehow think it's weird that we want to slow down in the winter, even though everything outside is covered in a blanket of snow, at least in our region, and is clearly slowed down.
Right.
So
but
it's
for
only
humans, it's laziness.
Right. So there's, I do want to just point out that there is a very interesting expectation of us on ourselves to be the same way throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Culturally, that's really driven home with the productivity of our jobs and our lives. And so I think, you know, it doesn't mean we don't need to do anything about it if we're in a place of constant sleepiness or fatigue and weight gain and feeling sad. Obviously, there are still measures to care for ourselves. But I do think that it's interesting to think about that natural cycle being a part of why we kind of take a dip in the winter.
Sure. But that dip, left unattended, can get to be very difficult. It could possibly threaten your mental health, your livelihood. And then, of course, we are in a modern society, so you do have to go to work.
Right.
So let's say you can't sleep in every day until 11 and become a, you know, a mini hibernating bear. Are there some things that we can do at home besides, like, you know, go to a tanning bed or something?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start with movement again. I use the term movement to mean any type of movement that makes you feel good. A lot of people say exercise, but there are people who have aversions to that word. So I'm going to say movement, right? So even in terms of thinking seasonally, you can choose to move in ways that work for the season you're in, right? So we might not be in the mood to go out for a run in the winter months, but maybe some yoga or maybe some dance or maybe something on cross-country skis or snowshoeing, finding ways to move your body that fits with the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of that as a preventative measure.
Okay.
And it's a big one. It makes a big difference in people's lives, and the consistency is really important. So you don't have to work out at the gym for 2 hours a day to feel the benefits of this.
Mm-hmm.
You can move for 15 minutes
and
feel it.
Okay. Sometimes it's hard to get even there, you know, if you're waking up and you're having really sad thoughts and your mind goes to a place where it's actively working against you and even your ability to want to take measures into your own hands. So even if you're at the point where you don't want to get up and move, is there something before that?
Yes. First and foremost, see a physician if you're in that place.
Okay.
If you're having a lot of difficulty getting out of bed and having any motivation to move about your days, it's time to see a doctor.
Okay.
But I would also say that vitamins, nutrients can play a big role. So that can come from food, but also supplementation. So we've talked about vitamin D before, and that's something that can really impact people's winter wellness. They can feel much better taking vitamin D throughout the winter. Vitamin D3 is the form you want to take, and generally taking, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 IUs of vitamin D throughout the winter months is going to be pretty beneficial for most people. Sometimes I give people higher doses, but I also test vitamin D levels in the blood to make sure I know how much they need.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're questioning how much to take, you can find a doctor who tests vitamin D and get a recommendation there.
If you're doing a big amount like that, do you want to go from, you know, 0 to 60, or do you want to be going, you know, first you're going 10 miles an hour, 15, 30, you know, and then building up? Like, do you need to increment in?
With vitamin D, you really don't. It's a fat soluble vitamin. So, you know, as long as you don't have major kidney issues, you can take a fairly large dose and your body will use it over the course of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So people who forget to take their vitamins, I will often have them take one dose a week, a large dose.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And that is generally pretty effective for most people.
So that is the pill form of something that we are getting from the sun when it's nice enough to not be covering up your skin and going outside. But they also sell these like light boxes. Sometimes they're called sad lights for seasonal affective disorder. Sometimes the branding is different and they're called happy lights. And, and the idea is that you're supposed to sit in front of them and they what?
They give you light. So they help your body produce vitamin D, essentially. And so the idea is you have a light box, you put it on your desk or your table at about arm's length away and turn it on. You've got to have your eyes open because part of the absorption comes through your eyes. And that treatment, if done consistently, can really help the vitamin D production in your body and help you maintain better energy and mood throughout the winter.
So if you are doing that, should you not be taking the vitamins then too?
So the truth is that every person I've tested vitamin D on who hasn't been supplementing has been low. So, I mean, low by my standards. So I don't think generally there's a problem with doing both.
Okay.
Again, if you have questions, consult a naturopathic doctor or somebody who's well-versed in the use of vitamins for health and wellness. But doing, you know, 2,000 IUs of vitamin D a day and also using a light box generally is not going to be a problem for most people.
Does that come in food?
Very little. We do get a little bit from food, and I can't even tell you the sources right now because it doesn't tend to be a sustainable way for us to maintain our vitamin D levels in our body. And in some of the northern climates are the highest rates of some diseases associated with low vitamin D levels. So we're talking about seasonal affective disorder right now, but things like multiple sclerosis are linked to low vitamin D levels. And so those rates of those diseases tend to be higher in our northern climates. So there is some evidence coming forth for keeping vitamin D levels up.
If you have seasonal affective disorder and you basically leave it untreated, is it possible that there will be an even more serious condition later in your life?
Yes. Certainly it could lead into a more chronic depression. And depending on the underlying causes of the seasonal affective disorder, like we talked about, vitamin D could lead to other chronic diseases in the future. The biggest risk that I can see would be depression and anxiety being something that lingers into the spring and summer and then becomes a chronic ongoing illness.
Hmm. Remember when doctors used to prescribe moving?
Did they do that?
Yeah, there was a lot of move to the sea or move to the sun.
Oh, yes.
You know, it predated some of the science behind it. They didn't always know the reasoning for it. But
I have had patients request I put that on their treatment plans to convince their partners they need to move.
Well, good luck with that. We'll see how the insurance companies take that up. Dr. Swabney, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ashley.
That was our Ashley Thornburg in a conversation with Dr. Ali Swabany, who practices with Prairie Naturopathic Doctors in Moorhead.